say good evening to everyone. It's good to see Michelle back. She made it back from the wonderland known as Iceland. She came back. She had to come back and warm up. Not yet. I think they're still negotiating on that one, you know. But I don't know. John said that Michelle did buy it, but I do not. But if we needed to make some more copies, we could. If somebody, Melinda, would you be able to go make some more copies for me, please? I don't know, make 10 or 15 probably. I never know how many copies to make, because some weeks there's a whole bunch of you in here, and other weeks there's not as many. I know there's things going on that you have to attend to, that sort of thing. But so I made more this week than I did last week. I don't know if I run out last week, Ted? I did. Okay. I just need to have more faith, I guess, is what the lesson is there. So we'll try to do better next week. But we're going to continue in our study of the letter of 1 Peter tonight. We'll be starting about verse 18 of chapter 2 here in just a few minutes. But always like to kind of remind us of where we were last week, so that it kind of helped us to get oriented to where we are this week. And in, for this particular lesson, it's very important that we remember some of what we talked about last week. And if you remember from last week, we saw that Peter was describing to his readers how to live as foreigners and exiles in what was going to be an increasingly hostile society. And he began giving instruction on Christian relationships to various entities that would be around them, that they would be coming in contact with. And specifically last week, we looked at what Peter had to say about urging them to submit to the governing authorities. And he urged them to do this not because they were inherently godly or that they were necessarily worthy of respect, but because, first of all, God has put them there to reward good and punish evil. And number two, submitting to the governing authorities is a good witness for Christ. And so those were the reasons that Peter gave to his readers for submitting to the governing authorities. And of course, we as New Testament Christians today, we're striving to follow that same example. And so, therefore, it is incumbent upon us to have that same attitude toward our governing authorities. Now, we're going to continue then tonight. We're going to look at some more relationships that Peter explores here, starting in verse 18. Relationships to other people and how those relationships affect the way society views Jesus himself. And so tonight we're going to see that Peter explores three additional relationships. He explores the relationship of slaves to masters, wives to husbands, and then also husbands to wives. So, and those are all particularly at the time that Peter wrote this letter, at least one of those would have been would have been more common, more prevalent in the world that Peter was living in at that time than it is today. And obviously, that the relationship of slaves to masters is a relationship that is maybe not as common today as it was at that time, although there are clearly places around the world where slavery is still an issue. And even in our country today, there is still the issue of human trafficking, which I think really is slavery. So we're going to read this passage tonight, and I'm going to just tell you right up front, this is a difficult passage. And so we'll read through it, and then we'll work through it together. And hopefully by the end we all kind of have the same understanding of what Peter's trying to tell us here. So let's start in chapter 2 and verse 18, and I'm going to read down through chapter 3 and verse 7. Now I'll be reading from the English Standard Version. But Peter writes, and he says, "Servants, be subject to your masters with all respect, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the unjust. For this is a gracious thing when, mindful of God, one endures sorrows while suffering unjustly. For what credit is it if, when you sin and are beaten for it, you endure? But if when you do good and suffer for it, you endure, this is a gracious thing in the sight of God. For to this you have been called, because Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example, so that you might follow in his steps. He committed no sin, neither was deceit found in his mouth. When he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but continued entrusting himself to him who judges justly. He himself bore our sins in his body on the tree, that we might die to sin and live to righteousness. By his wounds you have been healed, for you were straying like sheep, but have now returned to the shepherd and overseer of your souls. Likewise, wives, be subject to your own husbands, so that even if some do not obey the word, they may be won without a word by the conduct of their wives, when they see your respectful and pure conduct. Do not let your adorning be external, the braiding of hair and the putting on of gold jewelry or the clothing you wear, but let your adorning be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which in God's sight is very precious. For this is how the holy women who hoped in God used to adorn themselves, by submitting to their own husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. And you are her children if you do good and do not fear anything that is frightening. Likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered." Okay. Let me start off by saying that there are other New Testament passages that address the relationships that we have just read about here in 1 Peter. You know, there are other passages, particularly written by the Apostle Paul, that address these relationships. He talks about the relationships of wives and husbands and parents to their children. And he also talks about slaves to their masters. But when you read those passages, when you read what Paul says about those relationships, the goal is more about helping Christians to treat other Christians in the opposite or complementary role in the correct way, in the way that God would have them to treat one another. in this particular passage, Peter is dealing with more difficult situations. Now, when Paul is talking about those relationships, you know, he says things like, wives, submit to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord. He says, husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. He says, bondservants, obey your earthly masters with fear and trembling, with a sincere heart as you would Christ. And he says to masters, masters, stop your threatening, knowing that he who is both their master and yours is in heaven, and that there is no partiality with him. But in all of those cases, Paul is, those things are being written to Christians. Those are being written to Christian masters, for example. Because there were Christians who owned slaves. We know that from the letter of Philemon. And owning slaves was a very common thing in the ancient world at that time. But what Peter has to say about those relationships is less balanced, you might say. He doesn't discuss how masters should treat their slaves. And you ladies probably noticed this, but he also, the instructions that he gives to husbands are much shorter than the instructions that he gives to the wives. Now, I don't think don't read too much into that. Okay? But nevertheless, if you just want to look at the sheer volume of words that are devoted to those relationships, Peter obviously spent more time telling wives how they were to submit to their husbands than what he said in husbands to their wives. Now, you know, it's, you know, for the most part, Peter, what we read here in Peter's letter, I mean, he is imagining unbelieving husbands. He's talking about the situation where a Christian woman, Christian wife is married to an unbelieving husband, and how their wives should treat them. And he's talking about unbelieving, harsh masters and how their slaves should react. Now, hopefully, those harsh masters did not also profess to be Christians. Right? Because if they were Christians, then harsh treatment of their slaves should not have been part of the Christian way of living. So Peter is writing to people of that nature, you know, and he is concerned with how Christians in a weaker, more vulnerable role should respond to often unjust or even unbelieving authorities here. Just like he did previously when he's talking about the ungodly, unjust governing authorities. The principle is still the same. The reason to submit is to be the proper example, the proper witness for Christ. Now, it's important to make this clear, guys. Peter is not saying here, he is not saying that slavery, especially with harsh masters, is God-ordained. That is not at all what he's saying here. And he is also not saying that a dominant husband and a weaker wife is God-ordained either. He is acknowledging the social order as it existed at that time, and he's telling Christians how to live within it. Yes, Bill.
teacher.
It could be. Yes. It could be that student teacher student dynamic at work there, yes. But the things that Peter says here, they're really, if you stop and think about it, there are three ways that you can respond to what he says. You can read what Peter says here, particularly about the relationship between slaves and masters. And you could read that and you could be so troubled by the seeming endorsement of slavery by Peter here that you just dismiss the passage entirely. Say, Peter doesn't know what he's talking about. Yeah, David.
This is something new for us now. We've got Christian owners and Christian slaves. So they have to treat each other as friends. And that's what they're having trouble with.
It is. It's very much the case. And, it is slavery. Slavery was extremely common in the Roman Empire, and so it's important to keep that in mind, that there definitely were in the church, there were Christian masters, there were Christian slaves. But what Peter is talking about here is a situation where you have a Christian slave and an unbelieving master, which is a sticky wicket. That's a difficult situation at best. Okay. We're going to talk more in just a minute about how these people came to be slaves in the first place, because I think it's important to understand that. Yeah. Right. So that was a situation that Christians had to deal with at that time. And do we not still, is that still not a situation today that we in the church that we have to deal with? And you still have situations where, a Christian marries an unbelieving spouse. Our young people, one of the things that we try to teach our young people is if they want to, it would be best for them to marry another Christian. Because that the person, one having faith and one not having faith, can make for a very difficult situation in that marriage relationship. And that's kind of what Peter is dealing with here a little bit. But some people could read this passage and just totally dismiss it. Yeah, Beverly. Uh-huh. Yes. Yes. And I think in just a minute, when I give you a little more information about slavery in the Roman Empire, I think it will be a little easier for us maybe to draw some parallels between slavery in the Roman Empire and what we know today as the boss master, the master or boss employee relationship. So, give me just a second, though, okay, and we'll get there. Another thing that some people could do when they read this passage is they could read this as a full endorsement of slavery and patriarchy and use the passage to justify oppressive beliefs and actions. And unfortunately, if you look back in history, that has actually happened. It's not something that people who wear the name Christian should be proud of by any means. In fact, we should be ashamed of it. But there have been people who have taken this text and used it to tell slaves to stay in their place. And you do what I tell you to do, because that's what God says. Now, thankfully, our country has moved beyond slavery. There's a lot of bloodshed to decide that, to put that away. That's right. Yeah, you know, and you know, he is talking to the slaves here, and that's why, you know, that's why this passage has been abused historically, because it can be twisted to where it looks like, you know, right. Yeah. I understand, but we know if you look back in history. Yes. Right. Right. Yeah. Yes. Thank you for not doing that, by the way. Well, okay, class is over. Patrick just summarized the rest of the lesson, so we can just all go home now. No, just kidding. Yeah, Beverly. No, it's great. Yes, that's exactly right. And so what we're saying, what you guys are saying then, is that then the third option, as far as understanding this passage, is to understand that the Christians are called to live in ways that basically buck some society's worst standards. Okay? And so, you know, it is so that somebody might possibly say, you know, these Christians, you know, they act differently in their relationships. Maybe there's something to this Jesus after all. There's something about them that makes a difference in their lives. Yes. Our actions do need to mirror those of Christ. Yeah, Dennis.
Well, I see this maybe a quick cross out, but I think it goes very deep to even warn us of the importance of being patient. And I'm looking at the old King James Version. It talks about not only those who are good in general, but also the flogger, which means people who are continually obstinate and balky and contrary.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're a master, you've got to be patient with them, or whether you're a servant, the other way around. So we can inject the words of Christ where he said, as you would that others should do to you, do you also to them.
The golden rule, yes. Yes, it does. It very much does. So this idea of slaves submitting to their masters, Peter says, he says, you submit, they were to submit not just to the good masters, but also to the not so good or the harsh masters. Now, keep in mind that slavery as an institution, it was a very extensive thing in the Roman Empire at that time because of there was a large number of prisoners of war that made slaves very cheap. In fact, it's estimated that in the city of Rome, that 1 in 5 people in the city of Rome was a slave. And at one point, there was a proposal in the Roman Senate that would have required slaves to wear a distinctive dress to identify them. But that proposal was defeated because they were afraid the slaves would then learn how many of them there were in the city of Rome. Now, how did somebody become a slave? Well, it could be as a result of war. It could be as a result of piracy. It could be as a result of the exposure of a child, which everybody knows when I say exposure of a child, what I'm talking about, right? That's when they would take and take a newborn baby. If a family did not want that newborn baby, they would take that newborn baby outside the city to the wilderness, and they would just dump it there. And some people would go and claim those babies, raise them up as slaves. But it was also very common in the early church. The early church also had a practice of going and claiming those children who had been left to exposure too. But exposure was one, a way that you could wind up as a slave. You could, the sale of a child or yourself to pay your debts. Or you received a judgment against you in a court of law. Or you were born to a slave mother. Yeah, Bill. Yep. Okay, that's right. But in this case, that in a lot of cases, that was sort of true, but not necessarily true. Because, believe it or not, guys, slaves, the type of work that slaves did in the Roman Empire covered the gamut of activities that were required in the ancient world. There were slaves that were physicians. They were accountants. They were teachers. They were skilled artisans of every kind. They did most of the work in the great agricultural estates. They acted as household servants, and they were clerks in business houses, and publishers accepted them, used them as copyists. If you're going to do a lot of those roles, you can't do that in ignorance. There has to be some education associated with it. Does there not? Today we call them sweatshops. Well, maybe so, but I don't know. There's some large accounting firms that might take offense to you calling their shop a sweatshop. The point I'm making is that what they did as slaves, now, I mean, there are some of those things that are professions that are highly honored in our society today. And yet here they were doing these things, and they were doing them as slaves to a master. Yeah, David. Sort of like the Babylonians and the Persians using some of the best and brightest of the Jewish people. You know, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Yes. Yep. That's right. You know, and a lot of slaves received some wages for their work. And those wages could be used to secure their freedom, ultimately. Wages in the form of money or property legally remained in the possession of the owner, of the master, but was available to the slaves for their own use. In fact, the process or whatever of a slave purchasing his freedom is known as manumission. And the expectation of manumission was a very effective incentive for slaves to do good work. So, slavery, but there were no doubt, there were masters who abused their position as that a slave owner. And so those are the masters that Peter is really talking about here. And so Peter says, it's a gracious thing when mindful of God that one endures sorrows while suffering unjustly. Now it's important to note that Peter does say he is not condoning the practice of slavery, because he does say that the suffering, the treatment that they may experience at the hands of a harsh master is unjust. Well, yeah. You know, Peter is commanding slaves to submit not because the master is worthy of respect, but for the sake of God. It's the very same line of thought, the very same reasoning that for the reasons why Christians are to submit to the governing authorities. Now, well, there were well, that's possible. You know, I guess, you know, for us as, at least I think, for us as Americans, you know, when we think about slavery, you know, if you ever saw the movie Roots, some of you aren't old enough to have seen the movie Roots, but you know, that's what we think of when we're thinking of when we read slavery. And there's no doubt that is what Peter's talking about here, but it was also much more than what you saw in the movie Roots. Okay, is what is the relationship that Peter is talking about. Yes. Uh-huh. We can, although, you know, in this case, when Peter is talking about masters, I think he's not talking so much about a teacher as he is someone who owns another person. Okay, so, and I think there's an important distinction to be made there, because Jesus was a master too. I mean, the disciples referred to Jesus as a master, but were they slaves? I mean, were they slaves in the sense that the people that Peter's talking about here were slaves? I don't believe so. So I think it's a different relationship. All right, I need to finish up at least this part about slaves. I'm going to get whistle bit here. So, you know, Peter goes on then to compare the slaves, their situation, to Jesus. And he says that the suffering that you're experiencing is similar to the suffering that Jesus experienced. And he quotes several passages, and he basically retells the story of the physical suffering that Jesus experienced, which included insults through which Jesus' response was, no retaliation, right? Jesus didn't retaliate. Jesus suffered. He was the Son of God. I mean, couldn't he have called down judgment upon them right there on the spot? And yet, he chose to, he didn't issue any threats or anything like that. In fact, everybody remembers what Jesus said when he was on the cross. Father, forgive them. Totally different situation. And he also points out that Jesus entrusted himself to a just God. And he's saying, as slaves to a harsh master, put your life in God's hands. And guys, that's a very, very powerful lesson that I think it can be very challenging for us as people who enjoy so much freedom to entrust our lives to a just God. Sometimes our freedom can almost become an idol to us. And so it is very important that, you know, that we are every single day that we are fully entrusting our lives to God. So this is not an endorsement of the social order of the time as the best way or even God's way. You know, Peter is just saying, says, given how things are, here's how you should live in a way that will glorify Jesus the most. You know, and eventually, Christianity did not have the social clout at the time to do away with the institution of slavery at that time. It didn't have that power. But eventually it did gain that power. And it was because of Christians that the institution of slavery was ultimately done away with. So that is slaves and masters. I guess next week we'll talk about wives and husbands. And so Barney's going to be off the hook for another week. And because I need to finish this passage. Thank you so much for your attention and your participation tonight, guys. Thank you very much. Everybody have a good rest of the week.